KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
You have this kind of asymmetrical warfare coming from a guy who's great at a soundbite, lousy at an answer.
So are you looking for your own billionaire?
Nope. No, I don't want my own billionaire. I'm going to raise the vast majority of the money.
Brace yourself, America, for what?
King Trump.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Have you seen The Path on Hulu, which at first started off, it seemed like kind of a spiritual drama about spiritual qualities, and then became a melodrama about people needing spiritual reinforcement. Its creator, Jessica Goldberg, is here. First of all, thanks so much for doing the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
But it did. It sort of sounded, it started off with, we see Aaron Paul's character, and I guess what I like about the show so much is everybody appears to be one thing, and the more we get to know them, the more there's something else.
Yes.
And I would just wonder how far back that goes for you in terms of creating the show.
You know, I think that evolved, you know, it definitely started with the three people were Aaron was the doubter, Michelle was the zealot.
And it was Joe Monahan and Hugh Dancy.
And Hugh Dancy was sort of the pragmatist, you know, he was the one trying to take the religion into the second generation, which takes a sort of practical personality to do. So they all had that little, you know, they all had their box that they fit in, and hopefully, I mean, as the show went on, they became many more layers than that original intention.
But Aaron his character is a doubter who kind of wants to believe, if only for his own sanity.
Yes, and because he loves his family and he loves his life and he has nothing to return to. I mean, he's been, you know, he came to this movement at, like, you know, probably 19 years old, a broken, you know, his brother had just committed suicide.
We get to see that basically we get to see he wasn't somebody who was raised in it.
Right. And she was.
But he still has the appetites of somebody who wasn't raised in it.
Right. And the doubt is, you know, is destroying him. He hates it. He wishes it could go away. He wishes he could just believe again.
It's funny because if you take sexuality out of Tennessee Williams and replace it with a need for spiritual fulfillment, that could be this show.
Uh-huh. And there's also a lot of sex in the show, too.
In Williams, there's this need for sex that's never fulfilled.
Right.
I mean, you're never getting to have sex with the person you want to have sex with in Williams.
Yes.
And here, everybody's looking for a kind of a spiritual satiation that they never get.
Yes.
And at least that's the way it felt to me as I was watching it. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of sex in it.
Yes.
And a lot of worldly sort of pursuits, because it's not really, it doesn't eschew, it's not an ascetic pursuit so much.
Right. You know, like, I definitely felt when I sort of started writing the show that I wanted to explore that need for a meaning, like I called it a frame, you know, just like something, some box to put your life in, which we all sort of want at certain points in our life. I mean, most of us. And, you know, when I started writing it, I had been divorced and my dad had died and I was, you know, sort of going through all this real existential crisis of my own and felt my own lack of spirituality very poignant at that time. And so I just started writing this show.
Because that's a point where a lot of people turn to religion,
yes,
or spirituality, that point where they're in kind of emotional freefall.
Yes.
And especially if you've kind of divorced yourself from whatever religious or spiritual upbringing you've had, which is very much an American sort of 20th century thing.
Yes.
Where we want to think of ourselves as being above all that kind of stuff. But at some point, if you pick up a currency, there's "In God We Trust" on it. So
yes,
the idea of a spiritual life and a modern life, which is a peculiar and particular American problem, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, I was going through this, and then one of my best friends had decided to become a Jesuit priest at the same time, and, you know, in his 40s. So it was quite interesting to think about, you know, that I think it's, yeah, it is. It's an American, or is it, I mean, more than American, I think it's a very human
Because if we look at the stats in Europe, in most of Western Europe anyway, the pursuit of organized religion is diminishing on a generational basis. It kind of is here too, but at some point, so many people I know who get to be in their 30s and 40s just turn back to it.
Yes.
And that seems to be something to me that feels kind of American.
Yes, and I mean, I grew up, you know, in Woodstock, which had sort of in the 70s, 80s, so there was, that time was full of movements, you know. You know, we had Rainbow People and the Rajneesh, and, you know, it was like sort of a hotbed of, like, seekers, you know, that town. And I always remember as a kid being very sort of seductive, like people who wore certain outfits and hung out together and had crystals. And, you know, I coming from like a super secular Jewish, you know, family, you know, it seemed seductive.
It would. And what's interesting about these, your three protagonists, the three leads, is that they're all, in their way, incredibly lonely.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying that this organization, because I don't want to call it a cult, because I think it's an operating principle. It's a religion in the show. And to call it a cult would be a kind of a diminution, which is not what I'm trying to do. But they're all afraid to admit how lonely they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Cal and Hugh Dancy's character in particular is so deeply lonely. There's like a few, we'd always joke because there's like a few episodes where he's constantly offering people tea and no one will have a cup of tea with him, you know. And he's just like this man, and, you know, you meet his mother, who's Kathleen Turner, and she's just, you know, a punishing figure. And you just, you know, feel that loneliness. And I feel like all the characters that you meet in the show, you know, you do see what draws them to a community. And the community, I hope, is, you know, it's seductive. It has a beautiful garden. And, you know, they all drive, you know, cars that are hybrids. And, you know, they have, like, sustainable clothes that came out of the Salvation Army, you know,
those things that you saw as a kid that you thought would be cool to be a part of.
Yes,
in their way.
Like, it's like, but social utopian societies rarely work out. But I thought it would be really fun to explore it from the inside instead of, like, be a judgmental person from the outside.
And that opening you show, when we see that family, that's ideally what this religion could be.
Yes,
and that, I don't want to give too much away, but that disappears pretty fast.
Yes. But I do think, like, you know, I'm very drawn to, in any religion, like, the good work that's done and the work that's done where, like, social and government institutions fail you, that religion does step in. And I think that's why religion is so powerful, is because these other organizations fail us at times.
But, you know, it's that thing that Freud even said, basically, religion is a group of people in search of a father.
Yeah.
And that's very much what's going on here.
Yes, totally. I mean, the leader who, you know, without giving anything, who you soon learn is very ill, you know, that's certainly a father-son story with Hugh Dancy's character. And, you know, I'm one of the relationships that really emerged through the show is the relationship between Aaron Paul and his son. And that father-son story, I think, is really striking. And then, but yes, this God Father, is the big mystery.
It's the treatment. We're talking about The Path with its creator, Jessica Goldberg, which you can see on Hulu. Tell me, if you can, explain, do your pitch for the show. How do you pitch the show?
You know what? I couldn't pitch the show because I told my agents, I was like, I want to write this show about what I'm going through right now, where I feel like I just am, I kept thinking of that Plato's Cave allegory that's in the pilot. And I was like, I'm having this thing where I feel like my whole life is shadows. And I want to write about people, like, in a movement. And, like, there's this guy, and he suddenly realizes that maybe this world is shadows. And they were like, I don't think you can sell that. So they said, that maybe just write that. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go. I hadn't written for myself in a long time, and it felt like...
Were you doing a lot of rewrite work and stuff?
Well, I wrote, yeah, I would, like, write movies that didn't get made, and then I worked on TV shows. And so I just, like, shut a door and wrote it on spec. So I just wrote the pilot, and then I gave it to Jason Kadams, who does Friday
Night Lights, Parenthood. Yeah.
Yes, and he was my boss at the time I worked on Parenthood. And, you know,
which is another show about people in search of a father.
Yes.
As was Friday Night Lights, actually.
Yes.
So, I mean, so that's kind of Jason Kadams' thing anyway.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I was like, I wonder if it's going to be dark for Jason. But, you know, he just loved it. And I think you're right. Like, there is some sort of dream in all his shows that this show has as well. And so I gave it to him, and he was really excited by it. And we took it out, and everyone was pretty much terrified by the subject matter. And then Hulu somehow said, we want to do this.
Talk about Myerism, if you will. Yeah, Talk about the movement.
So the movement is, you know, it's culled from sort of the greatest hits of Eastern and Western, and then some, you know, sort of, you know, Greenpeace and, you know, stuff like that.
It's basically the most well-meaning tenets of every organization,
yes.
sort of ecological and spiritual of the last 50 years.
Yes, yes. So we really wrote a Bible. Once we found out we were going to have a show, we sat down. I had three writers with me, and we were like, we better figure this thing out. So there's, you know, 10 rungs of a ladder that were given to the leader, this guy Stephen Meyer. He was an army psychiatrist. He had a sort of, you know, I don't know, like a epiphany. He was working, testing on soldiers that came back from Vietnam.
Yeah.
And he just walks out of his life one day with $32 in his pocket. Later, Eddie retraces that walk.
And Eddie is Aaron Paul's character. Yeah.
And he, you know, after much searching, he climbs Huayna Picchu and a golden ladder appears. And that's when he sees this religion, this faith.
Yeah, I guess what's interesting about this to me is just that it feels like so much. Again, I said it's to me, it's the most American of stories, but it's a story that is so often not paid attention to. I mean, you would somehow think that in Parenthood or in Friday Night Lights, religion would become a bigger part of those shows. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be sort of, I don't want to say subtext, but certainly sort of, it's the love that dare not speak its name. Now,
yeah.
It's funny, you can talk about all kinds of sexuality now, but
yeah.
in television, but religion doesn't really appear anymore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the last frontier in terms of drama, isn't it?
It seems so, and yet, like, you cannot pick up a newspaper and get through a day without reading about ISIS or, like, extreme faith, or even, like, right now with our election, you know that crossover of, like, government and faith is dictating so much of what's happening in the world. And so it's bizarre that we keep it out of our entertainment.
Yeah. And was that something that you were determined to make play in this? I mean, that you because what's fun about watching the show is seeing, you realize what's missing from modern entertainment.
Yeah. I mean, once, you know, I started really, I wanted to write about what happens, you know, when you lose faith in life and also in your marriage. And then I wanted to, and then once I got there, then I thought this idea of how you take a religion into a second generation was really fascinating. But certainly once we started realized the landscape we were working in, it felt very exciting to talk about these things. And having that as like a, you know, like a sort of big mine to go back to and keep mining. Like there's an episode in which they take in some Honduran refugees. And, you know, just like that, you know, like when we, you know, you open the paper and you realize, like, you know, a church, you know, is doing this somewhere. And this, you know, that all this sort of great storytelling that is happening in society with faith and government, you know, there were just, it became like such a rich landscape.
But that, again, getting back to that whole ideal of searching for a father figure, a paternal figure, yeah, to tell you that everything's okay.
Yeah.
And that elusive dreaming, it's like the idea of chasing a sunset. The closer you get to it, the farther away it is.
Yeah.
And then that becomes finally the ache that the show is about, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, I mean, what's so beautiful about Aaron Paul is I personifies that ache so deeply. I mean, he really is struggling. And I think, you know, I feel like you buy it. You really buy that he can't, like, to walk away from this is to walk into nothing. It's to walk into, like, that, you know, but, you know, in the way that maybe you and I could walk away from our lives, like, he has no family, no money. he's like walking into the void of American life that is very sort of lonely and bleak.
On that note, we'll take a break.
Okay.
I guess it's Jessica Goldberg. She's the creator of The Path on Showtime. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. It gets better, I promise you.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. KCRW relies on member support to help keep our programming fresh and authentic. Find out how you can donate at kcrw.com/join.
Welcome back. We're looking for The Path. Its creator, Jessica Goldberg, is sitting across from me. It's The Treatment. One of the things what we were talking about before we sat down, not before we sat down, we were sitting down, but before we started, was that there are these poles that these characters all live in. And Michelle's character is, for me, the most frightening, and you actually said that, but for me, the most frightening kind, which is the person, the zealot who's ice cold. Mm. I mean, because there is a control that goes on there, but that becomes a fascinating thing. And Cal is a true charismatic mm-hmm. who in movies and novels immemorial has been made fun of mm-hmm. because, you know, you step and look at him from this side of the room, he looks like a sociopath because everything he says is so contradictory. But he believes everything he says as he's saying it. But on the other hand, you step over to this side, and is it not finally the sign of true belief? You know, the other philosophical tenet, where purity of heart is the ability to will a single thing into being, mm-hmm. and that seems to be what he wants as well.
Yes. You know, I think what Michelle's doing just, it blows my mind, because it's very brave, I think, to be that person that that is pure belief, and that will do anything for those beliefs. And I just think it's a very interesting character to explore. So she's just doing amazing. And then Hugh, yeah, like you said, he's deeply charismatic. But I feel like I'm hopeful you get compassion for the characters. And him, I think it grows because he's so complicated, as does Michelle's. Yeah.
But it's funny because the thing that we can see that Eddie wants that they both have is this belief that shapes who and what they are, because it defines them. Yeah. And what we realize about him, pretty much the pilot, actually, yes. is that he doesn't have that definition. And there's a question about him that's asked that deals with faith, both marital and religious. I don't want to get too much into here because it's really kind of the spine of this first season of the show. Mm-hmm. And in the question that's asked. And I was wondering at what point that question came to you. Because, again, that feels to me like Tennessee Williams. That could be that could be Streetcar mm-hmm. or that could be The Glass Menagerie. I mean, there's so much of Williams is about a certain question of physical and spiritual faith. And actually, I should ask you, Williams is somebody you like or influenced by.
Yeah, I started as a playwright, so I definitely was like more in the sort of love affair with the Chekhov world of plays. But Williams, yeah.
But that sort of Strindbergian dialectic I mentioned earlier, that's very, these three characters kind of are that, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right away, I think for me, I was wrestling, you know, sort of like I said, with the death of my own marriage. So I, in a weird way, I think I was both Michelle and Aaron. I was like the person who would like claw someone, you know, claw to keep this marriage together. And on the other hand, I was like the complete doubter. So it was like a sort of yin yang part of me that I came to the writing with. I don't know if that.
No, that makes sense, because I mean, there's something that's, I guess they're both finally about passion, but there's something so terrifying about that complete and utter belief that you will sacrifice anything for. I mean, there's a kind of weirdly almost, not weirdly, not almost, but a Spartan character to that this is what you have.
Yeah.
And you will make it work for you. Yeah. It's kind of the difference, pardon me for sounding Christian here, between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've met that person who is desperate to keep the person without hypocrisy is so interesting to me, you know, and I have to have respect for that person, because I do think that, like, in, certainly in, like, sort of the political landscape of Christians that are running for president, there's, like, so much gray and, you know, the you know, death penalty, but abortion, you know, no abortion, you know. So I have respect for the Mother Teresas who are, you know, have a straight line, you know, of... But it's also sort of terrifying to be confronted with a person that you can't chip away at all.
Yeah, because as much as anything, you talk about Chekhov. I mean, if you're looking at Three Sisters, I mean, that's really this constant argument about what is and what is not.
Yeah.
And that's what this show is. And I just wonder, you talked about not being able to write for yourself. Is that sort of that question that is, because let's look at it this way. American network TV shows, let's say we're in the golden era to TV now, but finally there has to be something that is concrete, something that is immutable. And you wanted the chance to do something that didn't have this immutable construct, didn't you?
Absolutely. I mean, I had no idea. Like, talk about faith. Like, you know, you just, like, when you go in a room and write something, it's a leap of faith, really. You no one may ever see it. No one, you know. And we certainly, like, when it first went out there, we definitely were like, it was pretty rejection.
Did you go to a lot of places with it? Didn't just go to Hulu immediately?
Well, that was part of the sort of group of people that we went to. But no, we you know, we definitely felt the sort of fear of the, like, people were very complimentary about the pilot, but they definitely were not jumping up and down to make it. I think, you know, attracting this cast was very helpful. And
were the cast attached when you guys went out with it?
They weren't attached, no.
Okay.
No. But once sort of Hulu got involved, and then they, you know, sort of, I think they were going to do it anyway, but as with anything, the cast would help a lot. And, you know, I think somehow the material really, the actors were very excited about the material.
I want to get back to, though, you answering the question about writing this thing for yourself.
For myself, yeah.
Yeah.
I felt, you know, and that is sort of the amazing, you know, part about going through pain, you know, just because I had that sort of, you know, with my dad and my divorce, you know, there became this sort of deep need for something for myself in all the sort of, you know, network television. And just because you become as a grown up who's raising a child, like, you know, you need to make a living, and so I had some sort of primal need to write something for myself.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you talk about losing your dad, and that's kind of your past, you know, and losing your and having your marriage fall apart is your present and your future, and that's kind of. The sort of the two poles that Eddie is stuck between, because his family is this thing that has saved him, that kept him from destroying himself.
Yes.
And following Cal is this thing that it's portends for the future for him. And he really can't quite believe either of them.
That's true. Yeah, that's beautifully said. Yeah, thank you. It's so interesting to look at it that way. Yeah. And I think, yeah, that is definitely where he is.
But that also reflects on your on the autobiographical elements you were able to bring this to make him that person who wants to believe in one or the other, but knows in his heart that he really can't quite have both.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting, too, because we start to, as the show goes on, there's a question if it's real. I mean, I think that really becomes, you know, this, like, there is a woman who was on the mountain when the ladder came, and her hands are burned because she tried to climb.
Well, I was trying not to give too much away, because there does get to be this, but again, those are the, I mean, we talk about sort of transfiguration.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of faith.
Yes. And just the people that sort of are able to say without proof that they believe. It's such a fascinating landscape of, like, the human condition, too. Like, the people that can say, you know, I believe in something that I can't see or feel or touch. And then the rest of us who are just so pigheaded and you know, need, you know, we need to see it.
It's the treatment. We're talking about proof with the creator of The Path, Jessica Goldberg. The show is on Hulu, and it just got picked up for your second season. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So exciting.
Yeah, but you kind of leave some scorched earth at the end of it.
What are we going to do?
I'm always fascinated by this idea of writing yourself into a corner. I mean, was part of that you thought, well, if we could do this one season, we're going to do this one season, and that's fine.
Yeah. Well, you know, we definitely, when we got to the end, because, you know, once we had this cast and we sort of saw what the show was, we had we felt pretty good that you know, and Hulu was sort of starting out with us, that they would hopefully support us into a season two. So we did try to write the end to thinking about a future for the show.
You were saying you decided to write this on spec because you just thought that epistemological question you want to start off with was going to be what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember sitting, you know, like once a year I go into the agency and they sit and hear your ideas, you know, and when they heard this one, I mean, they've been amazing, but certainly they thought it would be better that I not pitch it. They didn't think it was a
pitchable.
and I'm so glad for that now because it really allowed me to really write, you know, and not have voices while I was writing, and not have a lot of notes. You know, I just had been in the mire of like development, which is you really lose your own. You know,
what's that great? Whenever I hear the stories about development, it always reminds me of that great line from Blazing Saddles: "Gentlemen, we have to justify our phony baloney jobs." And this, you have to trust yourself, which is something kind of trust that hadn't been placed in you just because of those fears that come out of those notes.
Yeah, and it allows you to like sort of like I think go to deeper depths of your own subterranean. You know, what's going on, you know, to just sit in a room and not have voices.
And once you did that and the show went to Hulu, are they as involved as a network would be?
You know, they are amazing because they are super supportive and involved, but very in the best foot forward of what I'm trying to do. So I feel like they have very few notes, very well thought out notes, and usually, you know, very perceptive notes.
Do you feel like because you've kind of cleared that hurdle that the season two is going to be a little bit tougher for you to do because you've participated in this exegesis now and you don't really need to have this writing process answer these questions for you anymore?
Such an interesting question. Well, hopefully the show and the character, you know, it's like you said, it's also become deeply melodramatic and, you know, we found like, you know, these very like sort of deep personal relationships between characters and like I think very sexy relationships between characters. So now we have all that. But what happened as you start to research the subject is just like how much there is. Like, you know, I was amazed. We went online to sort of see, oh, what, you know, like crisis of faith. And there are chat rooms, you know, with people that are struggling, like Aaron Paul's character, that are online, you know, like super Orthodox Jews or more, you know, that are like afraid to tell their fan. Like it is like a real, you know, people live like this. And that was really exciting to find out. And this year we had a woman come in who helps people get out of. So the sort of like, you know, the world of the show has grown beyond my own, you know, my own existential crisis. And now I feel like we can actually sort of get into, you know, some issues that are in the world.
Well, thank you, Jessica, for coming back for season two.
Okay, thank you so much.
My pleasure, my guest, who's put so many questions out there that the show doesn't answer, but you have a great time watching it. The show is The Path on Hulu. My guest is Jessica Goldberg. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Marcia Conwell. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake White, who's associate producer. I'm not on any path. It's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.